K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E, Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse.
Forever let us hold our banner high, 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 high. Boys and girls from far and near, you're welcome as can be. M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E. Who's the leader of the club that's made for you?
My thoughts drift back to erect nipple wet dreams about Mary Jane Rottencrotch and the great homecoming fuck fantasy. I am so happy that I am alive in one piece and short. I'm in a world of shit, yes, but I am alive and I am not afraid.
This is malaise. And it's like, they don't even, they're like, live, die? I don't fucking know. Like, you're totally correct in that. And that's what I thought was wrong with, like, Jay Widener's feeling on Barry Lyndon. I've just felt like he didn't get the point of it. And so he was like, oh, look, Kubrick must have been bored because I was so bored while watching this. And it's like, I don't think Kubrick was bored with Barry Lyndon. I don't think he did The Shining to make things more exciting. I mean, maybe.
Right, you're saying the lifestyle of the people in the movie are boring.
Right, which isn't about Kubrick being bored. It's about him trying to make a point about, from the context of these people, why everything. And so this is what I realized about Catcher in the Rye. I was looking at fucking Joseph Atwell went on his Red Ice thing. And so I didn't want to listen to Red Ice because it annoys me. And I thought I'd listen to Friedman. But then Friedman actually kind of really bothered me, and I actually sent him a comment about it, and I don't know how he'll respond. I mean, we had him on here. I thought he was great, but when he had Joseph Atwell on there, Joseph Atwell was just talking some bullshit. I mean, he is very logical, and he was making some really good points, and then he was just, like, talking about all the people losing their souls on acid, and all, like, his Grateful Dead thing with that, you know. And sure enough, yeah, CIA all over the place. I get it. Osley, I understand, you know, these people with connections to government and stuff, but I don't think, like, his conception of control isn't the reality of what's happening. What you have is a conglomeration of all kinds of different ideas about what's wanted and what's ever, what, you know. And I can't ascribe to the idea that everyone involved in MKUltra with all of its umbrella projects and all of its everything was, like, diabolical. Like, I think some people were actually well-intentioned in government, including in the CIA. I'm sorry, but
And again, it presupposes that their intention of control was successful.
Right, exactly. And obviously it wasn't, and that was my statement to Joseph Atwell, was that, like, what the fuck, dude? They flipped the script. If this is what they wanted, this isn't, like, they didn't get what they wanted. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had to flip the script and make everything about what, you know. Anyways, point being, talking about Catcher in the Rye, he had this thing where, you know, when in the book Catcher in the Rye, when they sing the song, or when he's referencing the song being sung, and he says the song is coming through the rye, which is sexual lyrics, but he was saying it was Dixieland, quote unquote, whorehouse version. Well, if you look into the whorehouse version, every time it says kiss, it's replaced with fuck. And when it refers to her thing, they replace that with cunt. And so he heard Catch a Body in Catcher in the Rye when they're singing the song. And so he relates to it in this metaphor in his head where thousands of children are running through a rye field and he's going to protect them from jumping off the cliff. And so, you know, Joseph Atwell was like, this needs to be removed from schools because this is fucked up because it's literally saying fucker in the rye. And Catcher in the Rye is about sex. And I was like, okay, well, I looked into it deeper and I found that in the 1920s, there was a silent film called Coming Through the Rye, based on a book called Coming Through the Rye, which is named after the poem Coming Through the Rye from the 1700s. And so I go and I look at the film and I see that at the end of the film, the place where the reason why it's called Coming Through the Rye is because the guy references the poem when he's going off to a battlefield that he knows he's most likely going to die in. He sends a letter to his wife saying, I'll be coming through the rye, which you could take as a double meaning. I mean, it could go either way depending on the outcome. So if he survives and comes home, he's coming through the rye because he's going to fuck his wife when he gets home. If he dies, he's coming through the rye. It's like a metaphor, you know, of like you're going through the rye. Maybe it's a death metaphor of war. which is speculative. But the place where it's affirmed for me is in J.D. Salinger's the last and best of the Peter Pans, which is a book that J.D. Salinger wrote that he specified to his publishers that it not be published until 2051. And his publishing company in 2013 basically said that they would actually publish the book before 2020. And so along with a number of other unpublished things from J.D. Salinger. But if you look at that book, The Last and Best of the Peter Pans, which is – this is ridiculous because I was waiting for the – I had found this a while ago and I was waiting – for Freeman or Atwill to bring up the last and best of the Peter Pans, and they don't, but they do bring up Peter Pan because they're bringing up Disney, and then they start talking about Peter Pan being written by a Mason. I was like, you guys brought up Peter Pan anyway. It was sinky as fuck. Anyways, so in that book, you have Holden Caulfield's brother. It gets a thing for the draft. And his mother hides the draft deal, and he gets really upset at his mom for hiding the thing for the draft. And she expresses to him that she was afraid because her other son, had died in a war. And so she wanted to protect her son from getting killed, and so she hid the draft card, or the draft thing. And so, but then they even reference Holden himself as his brother in the book. And then they go on to mention a pitcher's mitt with poetry on it, just like in Catcher in the Rye, which is a catcher's mitt. So you have this weird thing there. But so in this book, he says that the cliff is literally war, and he wants to save the children from going off this cliff and dying in war. And so you have two examples, both in the silent film, which is written long before the book Catcher in the Rye, where the cliff is related to as Yeah, but not the cliff, but that he's relating combing through the rye to war. And then in this, you have him relating it to war, except in both places, you have it's related to sex. So you have sex and war. And so this is just to tie back to what you were saying. You could take this a few different ways, but one of those ways is just that the rye is back home. The rye is the joy of sex. You're getting it on in the rye. It's fucking awesome. Now, war, they train the military, and I'm sure Salinger is not an exception in this, to equate killing with sex. So if you get a kill, it's basically like getting laid. And they do this. This is basic training. They've been doing this forever. It's known amongst Marines. I've talked to Marines in person, a few of them, that have actually expressed that, yes, that's true, that your gun is essentially your dick. And so I was like, he's showing you the options. He's like, you can be, there's no place like home. That's where Oz comes in, which is interesting that Mark David Chapman identified with Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz in his psychological analysis. And the Munchkins told him not to shoot John Lennon and all that. But that the paragraph that he reads in court is the paragraph that you're like, the cliff is going off to war and dying. Staying in the rye is just... being home, there's no place like home, and getting laid. And so do you want to, like, I don't know, I couldn't help but see that association. Oh, but the point was, is that when he's saying Catcher in the Rye and he's mistaking the word, it's Joseph Atwell was saying it's fuck, which it could just likely as be, it could be fucker in the rye, but it's also cunt is used in the same way that Holden in the book mishears it. So he's basically saying, you know, cunt in the rye, which I was making a joke is maybe why the book's red. But I don't know. Anyways, I just want to mention all of that because it's kind of
significant. There's a cunt in the rye?
Yeah. Because it's in the song. So if you look up the song and it says, you know, it says, I don't know how to relay it because I don't, you know, it's from the 1700s, so whatever. But yeah. It's cunt in the rye.
It's not like a euphemism for like jizzing in someone's face, catcher in the eye.
No, but I think that it is actually that the catcher's mitt is symbolic of a vagina, perhaps, because he got it from what's her name in the book. But the, you know, and it's like the vagina is like poetry. He's like, if you immerse yourself in the vagina, it's like a poetic experience. But that's my own projection. I never heard anybody say that. But even
you've never heard anyone say that. I think find immersing myself in a vagina is pretty poetic.
No. I mean, in terms of Catcher in the Rye.
Okay.
With the baseball mitt that he gets.
Right.
With the poetry, when I read it, I had that thought on some level. I had a lot of weird thoughts. If you just go through that book and you underline all the times where it talks about killing it and dropping dead, it's fucking endless. I don't know if you noticed that. And when he has the shooter hat, he's wearing his hat, and he's like, this is a hat to shoot people in. This is a people shooting hat and all this stuff. It's like, what?
What do you think, really? Catcher in the Rye, it captured the nation when the book was released, right? And the reason why we know about it, let's just be honest, is that it sold a shit ton, right? It put Salinger on the map, and he became a celebrated American author. And it was because he sold a lot of those books. So, but take the bell curve of the people who bought that book. What was the average experience with that book? Does that have any value, or does this esoteric deconstruction have value, or is there a
good question?
You know what I mean? What are we talking about when we talk about Catcher in the Rye? Because if it never sold, would we have stumbled upon it? Would we have paid it attention? Would we have paid it more attention?
Well, this is a good question, because this is I could argue that it's very possible that that is another example, like modern art being basically financed by the CIA. And I have no basis for saying that.
That's such horseshit.
No.
I hate that fucking thing. I hate that.
What's that?
The CIA financed modern art to. Prove it to me.
I can actually prove it to you. It is actually
provable, but again, missing the point.
Right. I don't think that the explanation that's given to us as to why is the real explanation.
Provable.
Well, I mean, only to the extent that the people who financed Jackson Pollock and a number of artists had heavy. CIA involvement
and admit to so the
and admit to it and talk right. about it in interviews at this
but,
point
right yes. but the again it's so all of this is a certain amount of hearsay and could possible disinformation or cosmic giggling or intelligence agency giggling, right? But the quote-unquote provable aspect of it is that basically it was a Cold War tactic to make like a form of American exceptionalism. It would be like saying if the CIA gave money to America's Top Idol or whatever on TV to make it a number one show and get it distributed into homes in Pakistan and China and wherever. So everyone's like, wow, look at how amazing this is. It was basically like an experiment in, quote unquote, like promoting American exceptionalism.
In 1952,
yeah.
What was a good job in America? What was a good, if you were an intelligent person, fairly enlightened, you had a good grasp of the cosmopolitan nature of the globe and, you graduated a good college and you actually learned something. Well, I mean, what was a good job?
I'll tell you, commercials. That's where the money is.
Well, that was an attractor, definitely. It definitely started to suck away some of the best and brightest. But, I mean, who are these people employed in the CIA? You know, what is our definition for someone who worked as part of the CIA? I mean, can't we compartmentalize their daily life and say they punch in at the office, they got a little interest because they have a broader perspective on the American landscape, they've got some disposable income, how do they invest, who are the people they associate with, where are the parties that they, I mean, today's CIA member is a robot, right? We're not talking about the best and brightest, we're not talking about the free spirits.
I don't know anybody in the fucking CIA, dude.
We're talking about a bureaucracy now, but I don't think it was the same back then.
I really don't know.
So for us to say CIA, I just to label somebody like that is, I think, superficial and wrong.
Well, that's what I was the point I was
as a way to be funded as like It's like the deconstructing the deadhead argument. I mean, it's all there on paper. You can construct it logically. Thank you, internet, because you would never get there without the internet. I mean, you can build a the effigies we have now are made with flesh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the straw man that we have today are made with flesh. The false arguments we can build are living and breathing.
Right.
These arguments are bullshit because you feel them in your soul. And I refuse to have some nitwit on a computer tell me that, you know, 1,000 people they've never met and the billion connections between them equal the truth that they got out of...
No. So this is just to be clear, Bill, if I make a statement to you like blanket statement, CIA funded modern art, that requires so much qualification, not just like how that happened, but the circumstances and all the intentions and all the everything and what that means. Like, that is such a huge fucking topic. And just to make a blanket statement like that, I would argue is kind of ridiculous, because it also what is the CIA? I mean, it's Central Intelligence, but you have so many different projects and so many different people involved. That's the problem. If you're going to talk about conspiracy with people and you want to talk about 9/11 and shit, it's like there's this assumption. And I wasn't realizing what the problem was when I was going back and forth with these people who are just deny that there's any possibility of a conspiracy. I'm just like, dude, what do you think conspiracy means? Because I need to get to the bottom of like what you're fucking, how you're interpreting this. Because obviously it's removed from where I'm at. And then I realize that these people can't conceive of the concept of what it means to have a rogue facet.
And I think, again, but see, to me, even the rogue facet aspect is, look, if you're a government agency that has a fuck ton of money to piss around, right, to throw around, and you're trying little experiments, well, maybe if we can throw some money behind this, maybe we can, you know, just as they might try and agitate a group or, you know, crumble a little artistic movement because they think it's a threat to them, they might support another artistic movement because they think that might end up benefiting. You know what I'm saying? It's like these are people trying to move chess pieces, again, presupposing that their efforts of control are actually working, that they're able, they might be able to push some pieces around on the board. That doesn't mean they fully understand or control the board.
Right.
And I think that again is where, like, you know, it's a common thing in the Christian conspiracy crowd. Oh, the CIA funded, you know, the feminist movements and, you know, all these sorts of things. You know, Gloria Steinem's newspaper got CIA funding. It's like, well, you know, there's the idea of, was that money essentially laundered because they thought that would be a good thing to disrupt something or something they could control? Was it an experiment? Is that still happening? Did it pan out the way they expected? You know, that's all part of these parts of the conversation. And then, you know, Bill, also your point about the CIA being like a, or like just, the, I'll admit I have a hard time with a lot of this stuff when it's, so say like the, what's his name, Jim Morrison's dad being actually involved with Gulf of Tonkin. Now that particular case is fascinating, but for the most part, when you have things like saying, you know, a Jan Ervin type guy that'll make the point of his father was in the military, you know, like talking about all these different musicians of the 60s.
Right, so all of a sudden it implies that he is just like a military man himself with a military ideology.
Right, I guess, you know, so like I said, I want to take Jim Morrison, I think, is a different, is a very specific example, which I think is fascinating. But I want to avoid that example for a moment. But to say when, in general, I hear a lot of people say, oh, you look at all the 60s musicians, all their dads were in the military, which means, right, they are, the whole 60s movement was an outcropping of this military family. Probably it was a rebellion from that military family. Probably it was because everybody's father was in the military at that time. Probably it's like when you say, oh, their grandfather was a Freemason. Everyone's grandfather was a Freemason at that time. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's to me, there's
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
man.
I understand what you're saying.
We got Kyle Hunt. We all must be white supremacists, right?
Right. As I'm saying, this is at some point it becomes exactly a sort of guilt by association, but also a way oversimplification when it's guilt by association with something that millions of people are involved with at levels that are not at all what we're talking about here.
We all know that this is why the two sync books are black and white.
For sure. It was brilliant decision making.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill, I was sort of trying to say,
hey, here's the deal.
I do get you, because that bothers me. Yeah, that totally bothers me too.
I took that the wrong way.
You took what the wrong way?
His I get you, and that totally bothers me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so, when I find myself agreeing with you, it does scare me a little. Yeah. No.
Yeah, it's the worst. Listen, here's a quick timeout for an Always Record poll. I'm going to ask all of you to raise your hand. Have you ever seen a Jackson Pollock painting in the flesh?
I have, yeah.
Have you?
My hand is not raised.
David?
I went to a couple modern art exhibits, and there may have been a Jackson Pollock, because there is a lot of... Stop.
Keyed in on one and said, shit, that's a Jackson Pollock. Let's see what's going on here. You never remember that.
I saw a lot of paintings that looked like they were done by elephants' feet.
Yeah, well, if you see a Jackson Pollock, Alan, talk about your experience seeing a Jackson Pollock.
All right, well, let me admit first and foremost that as a much younger man, like high school, early college, total ignorant dickweed, I just thought the idea of Jackson Pollock was stupid as fuck. To me, it was, and this is before I had seen one in person, mind you, that's number one, but also just the whole idea of it was like, oh, I could fucking do that. And which I think is, well, I don't know if a lot of people wouldn't admit that, but I think that's most people's reaction to the whole idea, right? I could fucking do that. Why is this guy fucking famous? And what's with that shit? It seems like a con. It seems like to fall for it is you've been fooled. This is just some guy splattering shit. This is... my opinions on it changed with just an appreciation of abstraction in my own life, and probably due to psychedelic use, quite honestly. So maybe the CIA mind controlled me into appreciating some abstract art. But I remember being at the Museum of Modern Art in Manhattan and walking around and thinking, oh, I don't want to see that Jackson Pollock shit. I didn't even want to see it. It was, like, beneath me, right? And I remember stumbling into a room that was full of Jackson Pollock paintings and being like, oh, man, I can't believe I'm in this room. And I'm being very honest. It was like, fuck this, right? But going back a few years later and then actually going, all right, let me walk up to the fucking thing and look at it. And that was a very different experience.
And what did it... I mean, is there anything more you can say to that?
I guess just to say that it definitely is... it's clearly evidence of a lot more than just some guy going, fuck it, I'll call this art. It's clearly evidence of...
No, it's ordered chaos for sure. Yeah. And I was never trying to assert with pointing that out, like it's assumed that modern art has no value.
Let's talk about Pollock right now. Let's just talk about Pollock.
Why just Pollock? I mean, this is the modern art movement.
Bill's got something to say. You know Bill's got something to say. Say it, man.
Okay. You
Cthulhu
got something to say about Pollock?
Is modern art. Cthulhu is the hyper-reality. Cthulhu is the thing that separates itself. But the actual separate individual and the felt presence of their immediate experience, which is their art. So it's like we talk about Kubrick because we watch Kubrick, but do we talk about Pollock because we We are at one with Pollock. Can we be at one with Pollock?
Right, no,
so I'm just saying, you don't have even a memory of being at one with what he actually created.
Right. Well, so, okay. No, I can.
So
I
you're more apt to buy into the conspiracy, which
no,
is
no,
like,
no, that's not. Right. I'm not.
There's more people believe in the Kubrick.
No.
There are more people who believe in the Kubrick conspiracy right now than who have actually sat down and watched all the movies.
No, this isn't even.
And you know that's true.
No, I. Well, hold on. Hold on to your britches, there, buddy.
That is, this is the type of big change in our culture. Is this?
No. Hold
30
on.
30 years ago. More people had watched Kubrick than knew about the conspiracy, and now more people know about the conspiracy than know actually about Kubrick.
This is like the person who told us on the fucking Paul is Dead thing that because they were infatuated with Paul McCartney and they were female, that they're in more of a position to recognize that there's only one Paul. You can't tell me that because you've seen some, that as the evidence and people expressing what they're expressing speaks more volumes than how you feel about the art. And in fact, however you feel about the art is going to remove the objectivity from being able to assess the actual information. If you feel that's impossible because you have an appreciation for somebody and you feel that downplays them, I'm not arguing that that downplays them. Like, I wasn't impressed by Van Gogh when I was in school and I saw Prince until I went to Amsterdam and I saw the Van Gogh exhibit. When I was in San Francisco and I went into some modern art shows, I didn't, you know, I had my own conceptions of modern art, but I was actually really impressed by a lot of it. None of that is the point about how I feel about it when it comes to this people in the CIA admitting they're funding things and their explanation of why they're funding things.
You're giving them way too much control.
I'm not giving them anything. This is about what they gave themselves when they did what they did and then disclosed it.
So here's the thing. So you know how bees carry pollen, but they don't even know they carry pollen?
Sure.
So the CIA, if your conspiracy is correct, they carried modern art into Russia thinking they were doing it for a completely different reason.
All right, well, let's just be clear. And this isn't my conspiracy because I'm talking about it.
Well, only modern art could have been carried on the legs of those CIA bees into Russia for whatever conspiracy that thing was.
No, they aided it.
That art trumps the conspiracy. The conspiracy might be true, but it's trumped by the fact that only one thing could have been carried by those bees.
Well, I mean, why do you say that? There's a million artists out there that
like,
got
I've
their
sat
art
in a room with a Pollock, and I...
And you were impressed.
Well, you ever read the book The Man in the High Castle?
I watched some of the series.
Fuck off. Come on. Anyways, Man in the High Castle, Violator, you know it.
I have not read it.
Fuck off. Read. You've read it?
You can't read everything, Bill.
I haven't. I just haven't gotten
top
to it.
12, so I figure everyone's read it. Anyways.
I'm still waiting to get to the man whose teeth are all exactly alike, but yeah, go ahead.
So Tagomi is on the bench in the park in this split reality, and he has this piece of jewelry that was made by a Jew, and he has this transcendent experience with it. If you read the book, it puzzles you, and then you meditate on it, and then you go, oh, fuck.
Okay.
It's a Pollock. It's a true piece of art. Doesn't matter what conspiracy it's involved with. It's going to do the exact same thing in whatever book that has a certain reality surrounding it. And when you get to that part of the art, you're lost in it.
Right. Well, so, I do have a bias.
When you see a Pollock, it will teach you a lot about what reality was in that moment. And Pollock just nails it. It changed the world. Because the thing is, if you've seen F for Fake by Wells, and you see Elmire and the whole story of Elmire and how he could fake Picassos and Dalis and Van Goghs, and he would have never been able to fake a fucking Pollock for his life. If he tried to paint a Pollock, not a chance. Because only a Pollock is a Pollock. That's the thing about Pollock, is that he inverted the matrix. The art and Pollock became one, literally. Right, they canceled each other out.
Right.
And no one could fake a Pollock. And you'd say, my four-year-old could paint that. Well, a four-year-old could paint that, but they couldn't make a Pollock.
Right.
It's magic, dude.
You gotta understand I'm a Kubrick fan, and I feel like Kubrick was most likely funded by the CIA. I feel like that's the reason why he was able to burn film like 10 times more than any director up to that point and since. That film was expensive. How the fuck did they let somebody do that? Why did they let somebody do that? I don't think it was the production company. I think he had backers on top of it. And that's what I was arguing about Polanski, is I feel like there is genuine backers for large-scale commercials that will sell more than any fucking commercial, as we know, commercials ever could. Because these are full-length feature commercials, you know, for all kinds of other causes. And so, yeah, when I say, you know, Jackson Pollock may have been funded by the CIA, you got to understand that I'm not insulting Pollock by saying that or trying to downplay his art in any way. He wasn't invented by the CIA. He was popularized by the CIA. And you know how many fucking artists don't get recognition and who don't get paid, even when they're doing public gallery shows, and how big of an issue that is, especially in the UK right now? Do you know how many fucking gallery shows I've done without getting a dime? Over 100. And you know, this is, and I'm a small-time artist or whatever, but it's like, why is that? How did that come to be? Why did these different standards for art shift in the way that they did, which affected people? You know how hard it is for a fucking artist to make a living now? Why is that? Where did that come from?
Why is that? That's, you want to figure that out?
No, that's what I'm telling you right now.
Because there's like 35 million artists.
Right, but then when you have an artist that's being imbued, dude, to this degree, right, when you have a million artists who are doing incredible shit, it's like...
Yeah, sure, but you know what? Too much light makes the baby go blind. The average person is surrounded in everyday life by like 1,400
artists. What I'm telling you is that the fucking CIA are the ones who made it. If you paint a fucking trash can in 20 minutes, you can sell it for fucking thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And yet, if you spend thousands and thousands and thousands of hours on a single piece, you probably might not be able to sell it. It's not the
look at like rap music. Why is all rap music about spending all your money on crap?
Right.
And the really good rappers you never hear.
It's true. It went from my Adidas to my Maserati. And that's what I'm fucking, that's exactly what I'm fucking talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I agree. You guys lost me there.
No, my Adidas. You can afford a pair of Adidas.
The stuff that's promoted is the stuff that brings down the people who...
Oh, sure. That's commercialism. Sure, yeah. I mean, I think all mainstream, not just rap, but pop...
About the music business. Let's not talk about the music business. Let's talk about art.
It's the same
thing. It is art.
Yeah, that's what you would think.
That's what you would say, you fucking
motherfucker. You hellspawn.
You would say that, wouldn't you?
No, it's true.
No, but okay. Let's say this. There's clearly, right, you know, any music video, I think probably of the last, I don't know, 15 years at least, is a commercial, right? It's... Absolutely. And it doesn't, to me, I don't think it's just rap music. I think it's basically rock, pop, anything. You know, I remember I stopped going to the movie theaters when I had to sit through a commercial of Kid Rock singing a commercial for the Army, a 5-minute song telling you to join the Army. It was like, fuck you, I'm done here.
Right.
So it's, you know, that's your pop rock, your, you know, Taylor Swift, your rap music. Shut the fuck up. Why is my phone just blowing the fuck up? The CIA is telling me not... Oh, don't say that. Sorry. Taylor Swift is great. And what does that say? Oh, Kid Rock is awesome. Sorry. But no. So, I think there's a very, very obvious point. And Violator, I'd like to hear more of your voice because Phil, we've been talking a lot. But
yeah, sorry about that.
But
no one wants to hear more of my voice.
That's not true.
That's not true at all. But I think we have this one thing of being a specific commercial. So like literally, you know, like whenever that James Bond movie comes out and it's like, here's the new watch that James Bond wears, and it's like $3,000 watch, or I don't know how much it is, you know, whatever, being sold in Sky Mall or whatever the fuck, right? It's like these bizarre fucking things.
Any movie that has military stuff, they get it all for free from the military. They get tons of funding, right, all the equipment.
But under the agreement that the military can say...
It's a commercial for joining the Army.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The military has to approve their message. Which is why, you know, I used to love comic books, but it's like, I won't go watch, it's like, you know, Captain America, fascist fuck,
Iron Man, you know, military industrial complex weapons designer, Bruce Banner, you know, basically a weapons designer, right? Getting blown up.
Sure.
It's like this is the military industrial complex brigade that has taken over.
Or it's just John Wayne.
Well, it's that too.
John Wayne was a fag.
Yeah.
The hell he was. He was too, you boys. I installed two-way mirrors into his house in Brentwood, and he came to the door in a dress. That doesn't mean he was a homo. Lots of guys like to watch their friends fuck. I know I do. So I had to say it.
But
isn't there still room for a John Wayne movie, or no?
John Wayne Gacy, maybe.
Like, John Wayne represents the cowboy. Maybe all these things that we see in movies are dead already.
He was a fucking propagandist too, but not him. Like, he was a tool. John Wayne was a total tool.
Of course, absolutely. Fucking.
Yeah. Is Keanu Reeves a tool?
Yes, he's Superman. He's the next Reeves. I just realized that because first Superman were Reeves.
Oh yeah.
I just connected that like 3 months ago.
That's amazing. Really? Yeah, and he flies at the end of the Matrix. Like,
yeah. They even call him Superman. He's doing a Superman.
Guys, this is like 10 years ago. Come on, get with the time.
Hey,
I just put that together because I never put together that there was the two Reeves in the first place. It never like
they were father
me.
And son, weren't they?
No. Back in my day, there were only two Reeves.
Were they really father and son? No.
No. George Reeves and Christopher Reeves. No relation.
Remember that Matrix video that was circulating around that says Mr. Smith is the real Neo?
Yeah.
Bullshit.
No, it's A Course in Miracles.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, you can see it at the end.
Based on the prophecy of the Oracle, well, maybe the Oracle was wrong.
Yeah. No, I think that the whole ending of the first Matrix, when they're playing the Sanskrit, it's not. Mm-hmm. Is it the Gayatri mantra? No. They're saying from the unreal, lead me to the real, from darkness lead me to light, from death lead me to immortality, over and over again in Matrix Revolutions. And that whole sequence at the end seems straight like Course in Miracles. I mean,
bought that book like 6 years ago.
Those guys opened up a self-help clinic. You guys know about that? The Wachowski brothers or whatever?
Yeah.
And I must have talked about this.
Wachowski siblings.
Siblings, excuse me. Are they, what do you mean?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
There's this place, and they have a slogan that there's nothing in the water. It's like their catchphrase or whatever. And you go there with some issue, and they're like, we guarantee that you'll get over this issue. But there's certain parameters, like you can't ever repeat what it is that went on there. And so I had two friends that went there, Yoshi and Cinnamon. His girlfriend's name was Cinnamon. She was really a bitch, but... this is years ago. She's out of my sphere. But anyways, they were describing their experience, but they could only tell me so much. But basically, they were like, there was water coolers all along the hallway on both sides, like an abnormal amount of water coolers. So every time you're walking down the hallway, it's like opportunities to drink water are like constant. And everyone ends up drinking this water, and they have their slogan is, don't worry, there's nothing in the water. And yet... So everyone goes through this whole process, this self-help deal, and they come to the other side. My friend Yoshi was like, sure enough, yeah, I had these issues with this one thing and totally gone, whatever. And I was like, well, what went on? He's like, I can't tell you that. And he's like, all I can tell you is that it wasn't the water. Like, I was like... And this is their thing. I mean, they started it. He said that they were the founders or whatever. I don't know. I tried to look more up on it, and I couldn't find anything. But he was a friend of mine. I mean, he told me the story. I mean, I don't know, you know, that happened. So I don't know. It's really weird.
Weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, can we? I want to keep going, but can we? I don't know if anyone else is recording this. Can we just?
I am.
You are. Okay. Cool. But then okay. Then maybe we don't need to.
Have we been recording this whole time?
Yeah.
I don't want any of this released.
Are you joking? You're joking. Here, we'll just release 18 minutes. How about that? We'll pick a random 18 minutes.
I want a cold open with you saying, are you kidding?
Are you fucking kidding me? Jesus Christ. You got to be joshing me.
So Alan, can you stay up late? Violator, what do you got? We got 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
What do you mean?
2 minutes.
I got nothing.
What the fuck are you talking about?
You guys, I can't believe you haven't
That's it. I'm out of here.
Shit, we lost Violator.
The fact that, like, I haven't seen Full Circle, The Haunting of Julia, is, like, you not fucking reading The Man in the High Castle. Like, it's essential.
Sure.
You have to fucking read this book.
Sure. I'll get on it, man. I got, like, a list of books I need
like,
to read.
Kubrick wrote, you know Kubrick read that fucking book. There's no.
Oh, sure. Well, Kubrick read a lot of books. If I try to read everything Kubrick read, Jesus Christ.
You've already read more than Kubrick ever read.
I don't believe. Really?
Well, the internet. You live in a library, man.
I do actually live in a library beyond my internet.
You got a rabbi.
I do have a rabbi, and he has a library. But yeah.
Hey, can we go back then? If we're not going to pause for the recorder, can we go back? The idea of so we have the very explicit commercialization of modern, like anything modern movies are, you know, chock full of product placement, some of the most egregious thing I ever saw in my life was I watched Spy Kids 2.
Oh God.
Oh, stop.
Really?
Did you watch it in 3D?
No, I think the third one was 3D. I think the second one was, or maybe I don't know.
You know who the director of that is?
Yeah, Robert Rodriguez.
And you know his backstory.
What the fuck? So
you
do I know
his... Are you familiar with his backstory?
No, please educate me.
Okay, so Mexican kid makes movies, makes this 8-minute short, gets some attention, makes like a 90-minute movie, goes to Cannes. He never intended on releasing this 90-minute movie. He thought he would just make like a practice movie in case they asked him to make a movie. And then they said, no, we'll just release it as it is. And so it won Cannes. And so then he had to follow up a movie he never intended to release with a movie made for Hollywood. And so the guy, I mean, I'm telling you, this guy's feet on the ground. So fucking, you'd love him. I'm just saying. So that's that guy. I just wanted to give him a little backstory.
Well,
it's important.
It's totally important. Yet again, like, so, and I have no issue with, I think this is, you know, the issue David was talking about before of how do artists basically live, like how do you actually be successful as an artist? I don't know how the fuck that works. I mean, I can't make any of this shit pay.
Right? Right.
And at least we can trust you're not backed by the CIA.
You're the most.
But wait, okay, wait, no, no, but that's the fucked up thing. That's the fucked up thing, right? So okay, so there's like five different things I want to say here. But like, I saw somebody the other day, you know, Kira Young, right, friend of the show.
Sure, she
wrote something on Facebook, and I don't know who she was talking about, but she says like, if you see an alternative researcher say that they're mission or their goal is to be accepted by the mainstream or to be in mainstream media, then you know they can't be trusted. I'm thinking, that's bullshit, because everybody, like, you're telling me you have this truth that you're dying to get out there, and if, you know, Fox TV knocked on your door and said, we want to give you 30 minutes to tell all our listeners about your ideology or your truth or whatever, or we're going to give you front page in the newspaper, you're going to say, nah, I don't want that exposure. Fuck yeah. Right. Bullshit. Of course you do. Of course you want it. Especially if you have actually would think the more political you are, probably the more likely you want the mainstream exposure, the more you want to get your quote-unquote truth out there. Sure. Anyway, so there's this idea that invariably, once someone makes it by whatever standard we consider making it, they're immediately like this. There's this hipster bullshit in us right now that the minute we see anyone get even the slightest bit of recognition, we're like, fuck that guy. He's got to be controlled, or he's got to be, he's a sellout, he's a whatever. Like, oh, he paid his electric bill this month? What a fucking sellout, right?
Total sellout.
Right. But it's like, fuck you. All right. So it's like, there's this really self-damaging system that we have right now, which is, as you said, Bill, yes, there's an overabundance of media out there. There's an overabundance of art. There's an overabundance of talent. There's an overabundance. So it's like, and I would like to believe that there's a way to sustain all that. I don't know that there actually is. Right. But yes, I can go to Google right now and like we were talking, and I type, you know, Catcher in the Rye. I just want to see some images, right, for Rye Fields, whatever. And I see 100 beautiful paintings done about Catcher in the Rye. I don't know who any of those people are. I'm probably not going to follow through with them. I'm probably not going to buy their painting. And I'm like, wow, that's awesome. Next thing, right? This is probably what most people do, unless you see something that really fucking resonates with you.
Well, what I was speaking directly to before was gallery shows.
But well, okay,
and,
right, okay.
And the amount of gallery shows that are literally paying people who are showing their art there nothing.
Absolutely.
And that's just nuts. And it didn't used to be that way. That would be unheard of in the 1960s and 70s. Somebody does a gallery show, they're getting paid. I mean, that's my limited understanding of the thing. I feel like that's a relatively new phenomenon of just this kind of, like, given amongst the gallery, like, the spaces.
Right.
That they just don't pay you. Like, that's just nuts.
Well, again, it's because now we're in an age where you can tell somebody you're going to get exposure, right? Oh, we're going to give you the exposure.
Right.
It's a fucked up – I mean, that's what I'm saying. So all these different things have their own little – you know, quirks to them, their own little systems. But I guess what I'm getting at here, though, is that there's invariably there's going to be things that people do that you're going to try and pay your bills with, right? So Robert Rodriguez might say, hey, you know what? I'll make this CIA promoting McDonald's ad and get the money for it and maybe do something I really want to do with it. Or I don't know what Robert Rodriguez's deal is. You're telling me I'd love him. I'm telling you in the middle of the movie, like, there was a 5-minute break for a McDonald's commercial in the middle of the fucking movie.
Essentially, yeah.
Like, they stop and, like, the kids are like, ooh, that was a lot of fighting crime and being spies. I'm hungry. Yeah, how about you? And then they pull out their McDonald's Happy Meals. And I'm like, hey, yeah, what toy did you get? Oh, look at this. Oh, my burger is so good. And it's like, holy fucking shit. This is a 5-minute McDonald's commercial in the middle of a fucking movie. No fucking joke. No, like, it was just in your face. Boom. And not parody. Not fucking parody. Not a hint of fucking sarcasm. Like, this was, I get my toy and I get my burger. I love French fries. Now back to crime fighting. You know, I'm like, fuck you. Anyway, I could say, you could see how, like, a guy like Crispin Glover, right? I'm just as an example. He was in Charlie's Angels movie to get a paycheck and then turns around and he's going to make some avant-garde private film, right? I don't know, Robert Rodriguez taking that fat CIA paycheck and turning it into something else? I don't know the answer. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, I've been having this conversation with my wife lately, like, where I'm working a fuck ton of hours to try and pay my bills. It's really fucking killing me and barely able to produce any work. But the less work I produce, the less relevant it all is, and it just, I feel more and more out of touch. And I'm just thinking, like, well, if I'm basically selling my soul to this shitty fucking dead-end job to pay my bills, I could just as easily, you know, maybe I'll take a fucking graphic design gig that I didn't want to do or, you know, like, whatever. Like, maybe there's other shit I could do that's still shit, but maybe...
Not the same shit.
Right, it's not the same shit, or it's lesser shit, or is it at least shit that's kind of in a field I'm interested in, you know, like... You know, whatever. Yeah. And all these little ways that we devalue and have to sacrifice and chip away at our ideals, I think is it's a scary, but I'm loath to say, I think it was pretty much not an essential part, but an inescapable part of the equation right now.
Yeah.
And I think we're only, you know, when we talk about art movements, everyone wants to be uptight of who's authentic and who's real, who's the real artist. You know, there's that idea. But I think particularly since there's an overlap in our crowd, not only do you have that hipster, who's authentic, who's a phony, this Holden Caulfield, the phony shit, but we also have the idea that there's a political angle. So if someone's successful, well, they got to be financed by the CIA. If someone's stating something, that means they're getting paid to say it. I mean, and yet what I'm also saying is that if I understand the reality at my, you know, $20,000 a year level of income is small little ways I have to sell my soul here and there, I can only imagine what happens at the $200 million level, you know, whatever, right?
Totally.
What's that?
Bill?
The Dave Chappelle level?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, Dave Chappelle level is let's just run the fucking...
The Sink Pimp gets to the Dave Chappelle level. He's making $40 million a year running Sync Book Radio. Imagine that pressure.
Yeah, seems like that's pretty much...
Can you imagine that? I don't know if I can imagine that.
I can't even imagine that, no.
I don't think that's the road.
Well, that's the thing, you know. This is the weird thing that I get with the CIA is that it seems like they're kind of been groping in the dark, and they don't even know the ultimate outcomes of what the fuck they're doing. And I mean, the acid thing is one very extreme, obvious example, but it seems like that happens all over the place in general. And like, I really don't think that the CIA had any idea how people would continue to pick at the what happened with the Kennedy assassination, et cetera. And when they killed Martin Luther King, as a matter of fact, if you believe the court, in 1999, I don't think that they felt that, like, I think that they've been surprised at the public because they got so used to just looking at the public, like, how gullible people are. Like, they think that they're literally that easily led that they're not going to continue to challenge the thing. And so even with 9/11, I don't know if they could have predicted the degree to which people would be continuing to pick it.
Well, I mean, let's face it, David. If you got control over $40 million, what would you do?
If I got control over 40 million,
whatever that means.
Right. I don't.
To you.
I don't see the connection, though.
Dave Chappelle?
Can I just weigh in on that for a second? Is to say, I'll be the first one to say that when my mind immediately leaps to, it's not charity. Obviously, it's a selfish notion, but it's not like, oh, I would want a mansion. My thing is like, oh, I would, like, you know, buy a warehouse or something, and we could make films, or we could, you know, like...
Yeah. You know, I know what you're saying, yeah.
Like, I would completely invest it in creative projects, but when I realized that was my first thought, it's like, you know, for $40 million, I could probably help people, but that's I would selfishly help people. Like, I'm giving them my art, which they will love.
Right. Which they will. So there's that.
We'd be on the fourth volume of Suicide Kings by now.
Maybe. I mean, still, the Suicide Kings as it stands could be four volumes. Right now.
Well, 2, 3, and 4 were just like a pre, what do you call it, like an intro to Suicide Kings 5. Mm-hmm. Like the final Joker card.
Right.
So you know about the Juggalos?
Who was the other Jack? So you got Jack Ruby, Jackie Gleason. No, just kidding. Jackie O, Jack Kennedy. Who is the other Jack again? It's a dog or something? What the fuck?
There's the horse. There's a horse pulls the JFK's body in his funeral procession. Is named Black Jack.
Right. Got my pair. Got my Black Jack gun here.
Right. Your Jack Ruby. You know, so it's like, yeah, it's like a deck of cards. But, you know, exactly. I mean, when I think about the thing, like, here's something. I want to tell you guys flat out, I had this thought last week. So, obviously, it was 9/11. This whole lightning bolt shit hitting the crane in Mecca. You guys hear about this?
Yep, September 11th, lightning bolt hit. Well, it didn't just hit the crane. It hit the mosque itself and the crane.
The whole thing is a ball of what the fuck, right?
Right. It is. It really is. It's absolutely insane. And, dude, we're translating the text right now from the Zohar after a year. We're finally getting to it. Only in the last week, me and my teacher, where it literally gives the date of 9/11 and has the whole prophecy. And I really feel that that's the explanation of it all. That's like, it's Tisha B'Av. Not that it is actually Tisha B'Av in September 11th, but that's the Klephotic reversal of Tisha B'Av. So, and which is what it's supposed to be, because according to the prophecy, this happens in Rome. It's outside. They're literally waiting for 25 years from now for their Messiah to come. That's the actual prophecy. And so the world will be consumed in fire in 25 years from now. But before that happens, 2,000 years after the destruction of the last temple, it's the only prophecy that we know of in the Zohar. It just switches modes. Like, Baruch has never seen anything like this in the Zohar. It turns into the Apocrypha at a certain point in Book 3, and then it goes back. And it just, like, unloads this fucking thing where the strongholds in Rome will collapse on this day. And it emphasizes this is something that's going to happen in the distant future. But it's supposed to happen shortly before the end of the whole deal. And so we're there. And 2001 was it. And it literally gives the equivalent date of September 11th. If you look at the Gregorian calendar and compare it to the Hebrew calendar. And so in Elul. And so Tisha B'Av is the ninth day of the 11th month on the Hebrew calendar, if you're looking at the civic calendar, which is the one that this would be applied to. And so sure enough, the two temples get destroyed on 9/11 in the Hebrew calendar, and then our Klephotic version gets destroyed on our 9/11. And so they did a thing there, and it's not so subtle. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Well, okay, so I mean, I'd be curious to hear what your thoughts are on this lighting. Like, I was wondering if anyone's claiming that this is part of it. Like, is it, you know, weather control, or I'm just curious to know if anyone's sort of.
Oh, I'm sure people are going there with it. I mean, I've never taken the theory seriously until I looked at Judy Wood's work, the idea of energy weapons being used on 9/11. She actually gives an extremely strong argument, and she's also very well. She's got the credentials. She's very well qualified.
Do you have a feeling or a theory or whatever about this particular lightning bolt at
all
Mecca?
All I know is that that was what was supposed to happen. And Jason Barrera actually predicted it a couple months before it happened. I don't know if you caught that. But yeah, Jason Barrera put up a post with the Tisha B'Av being 9/11. And above it, he referenced the lightning flash of creation and the destruction of the temple. And you have to read it in his own words. He went into kind of like a prophecy mode in a post. And it's exactly what happened. I mean, he's relating the lightning flash to 9/11 to the temple. And that's where
but
that
don't
happened.
You think, see, this is my thing. You know, here we are. It's September 22nd, 23rd. I don't know what the big hoopla is around this week for people.
Oh, well, it's because it's Yom Kippur, and it's because it's the Muslim holiday as well. What is it called?
No, no, no. That's not what I mean. That's not what I mean.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like, does anyone know what I'm talking about? Like, this, all these sort of, like, essentially predictions about major events this week of either false flag or...
Well, that's why.
Worst. I fucking hate it.
I know.
I'm on the record. It's bullshit.
Thank you.
It's yellow journalism at its most crystalline purest. And I fucking can't support any of it. So fuck you.
Well, that's not the point. None of what they have to say about it is the point. The point is that it's a coincidence that's happening that doesn't usually happen. And whatever you want to say is you know, like what that means or whatever, that's subjective. I don't fucking know. I think it's another, like, people go into the end of the world thing. No one ever fucking said 2012 meant the end of the world, December 21st, 2012. I mean, as far as Jose Arguelles and Terrence McKenna and everybody, they were talking about something very specific that needed qualification. You know, everyone of you fucking loves this end of the world thing. I mean, they're all about it. It's always Apocalypse Now. Apocalypse Now. Jesus Christ. Charlie don't serve.
Like, oh, who's the worst? Who's the worst? Anthony Peake. Oh, Jesus Christ. Anthony fucking Peake. He goes, I just made the biggest breakthrough in the Atlantean theory in the holographic universe. I made the... And you know what? I'm going to put it in my next book. I won't say anything more about it now, but it'll be out in my next book.
Well, did you get his next book?
It's just like, fuck off. You know, like, drop it on us and then write the book and, you know, explain it all and how it changed the world.
But well, no, as I've discovered,
$19.99 for some video game theory. It's like,
hey, you know what, though? There's some truth to it, because when people start putting out all the information, people just take that information and do whatever else they will with it. And then it's like, is it, you know... It happens all the time, you know? I mean, I can...
So be subtly seduced down to that layer when you're writing about truth. You don't even know that you've sunk to that layer. You've bought in because you deserve to sell 1,000 books because you put in the time and effort, and you don't even know that you're sucking Satan's cock. It's like fucking Mark Maron this week interviewing Keith Richard, right? And he walks in the studio, and he's like, Keith's smoking cigarettes, and I'm eating nicotine candy. Ha-ha. And then Keith's got the box of Marlboro Reds, and Maron's like, I've got nicotine candies. You're smoking the real thing. Ha-ha. Maybe I'll smoke one of those. Hey, maybe I'll just hold it. So he just holds Keith's Marlboro Red. And then like 30 minutes into the interview, he's like, fuck it. I'm going to smoke my first cigarette in 10 years with Keith Richards. Why wouldn't I? And I mean, it's Bill Hicks sucking Satan's cock, a fucking routine right there, right?
Right.
It's like you sell out your personal beliefs for the fucking, you know, illusion of it all. And I don't know if Maron knows that. If he does, he's a genius. If he's not, he's still interviewing Keith Richards, so it doesn't matter. But pretty, I mean, is that, what is that? That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Well, is that his personal belief that he didn't like, or that he quit cigarettes, or?
Well, Maron's a very non-addicted person now. He doesn't drink, doesn't do coke, doesn't smoke pot, doesn't do cigarettes. He just does this interview show, and he works his ass off, right? He's like a sober comic. And so then he gets this interview with fucking Keith Richards, and he's holding a cigarette, and he smokes his first cigarette in 10 years.
So what?
You can't get...
I smoked my first cigarette in 2 years with Alan.
Yeah, exactly. What I'm saying is, what exactly? When
Edward Bernays paid you to smoke that cigarette.
Right. I got paid by Bernays, though. No one's supposed to know that, though. We'll edit that out afterwards.
What I'm saying is, look, Bill, if Keith Richards walked into your house tomorrow, and I don't actually particularly like Mark Maron, so I'm not trying to defend the guy. But here's the thing. I don't really know enough about him as far as, like, did he have a personal stance against cigarettes or something? But basically, that's like, wow, this is going to sound like such a douchebag thing to say, but...
You're going to be a douchebag. What else is there? Don't be a douchebag.
I'm going to be it, because...
Hey, fuck you.
Don't be the douchebag. Something else.
Look.
I'm giving you a different tarot card. You're the Queen of Cups.
What size are the cups?
You understand, well, I can't help it. You understand that that's like,
the pussiest thing he could do to be close to, like,
right,
like to,
he's
like
right, yeah.
Right. He's like, exactly. It's like this vicarious little, like, I just want to kind of taste a millimeter of this man's life, and right. I'm not gonna do any hard drugs. I'm not even gonna have a fucking shot of whiskey with him, but I'll smoke a single fucking little cigarette.
You guys know how Brown Sugar was written, right? You know this one. No, Brown Sugar came to be. So I was listening to an interview, and I think it was Keith Richards. And he's talking, it was on the radio, they were playing it a few years ago, and he was like, so I wake up, I'm not going to do the accent, so I'm not going to do it right, so I'm not going to do it at all anyways. It's like, I wake up in this hotel room, and I look down, and I fucking got a needle in my arm when he wakes up, and he fucking pulls the needle out, and he comes to, and he looks around the room, and everyone's passed out, and there's a black prostitute in the room who's naked. And he was like, damn, okay, all right. And he's like all groggy. And he goes to the recorder, the reel-to-reel, and he starts it up. And it's like them just strumming, just high as fuck, just saying, oh, the hook of, oh, Brown Sugar, how come you taste so good? And then he was like, that's it. We just got the song. But nobody there remembers the night before. They don't remember playing it. And yet, the song came out of that. Anyways, I don't know. You guys are just talking about this. I heard that at one point. It could not mention.
I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, so it's like, he didn't, if Marc Maron now is like, becomes addicted to cigarettes or starts smoking cigarettes regularly on his show or talking about
it. Would that be amazing?
That would be a different story. I think it's a very different story than, like... Like, Bill, I barely drink. I drink, honestly, like, once every 6 months to a year. When I was with you, you'd be damn sure I fucking took a shot with you, right? Why? Because that was the thing to do at the moment.
Did you guys drink, like, jet fuel or something? Or the bomb?
To the poison.
To the poison? Is that what you guys did?
I gave you a little bit of a hash smoothie, I think.
No, yes, that's right. That's awesome. And that was exactly. I was happy to do that with you. But I'm saying, we also, when we went to Molly Malone's, we had, I want to say, was it Jameson or something?
Yeah, for sure.
So, well, cigarettes are a gateway drug.
I guess.
So the next thing you know is this guy is going to be.
It's also a gateway drag.
So I guess I don't want to your point, Bill,
like a drag man.
No, I got you.
It's just a killer queen.
Like a drag.
I guess what I'm getting at is, Bill, your point is completely valid. Of that was a sort of, he was a douchey. Right, that he was douchey in that moment. What I'm also saying though is, you know, of all the things, that's. Pretty, it's a fairly tame and obviously timid if he had to sit there, touch it, think about it for 30 minutes. That's pretty pathetic, you know, it that he dragged that on. But ultimately, is that like a shattering of selling out his ideals, or is it just like a really timid, like, okay, I'm gonna put my toe in the water of, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I don't know.
Does that make it all, any sense? Or you just think, like, you know his personality or shtick better than I do.
I feel like I have a connection. I feel you have a connection.
Did you feel the same way listening to a show that you did when the first time you saw a Jackson Pollock painting, though?
Right. There you go.
No, because, dude, I mean, have you, like I said, that's the equation breaks down in the fact that we know all these other things intimately, so connected, but the actual presence of a Jackson Pollock.
Or whoever. See, that's the thing with paintings, though. Like, as I was saying, like, I never thought that Van Gogh was a big deal until I saw them in person, and I was like, Jesus, fuck!
I agree.
This is what this guy did? Jesus, God almighty, I had no idea.
The medium of a Jackson Pollock is like the organ of... It's not like Stanley Kubrick's films. It's like Stanley Kubrick himself. You're in the presence of Stanley Kubrick himself, not his films. There's a big separation with Kubrick in that.
I actually have to agree with David on this. Is that, yeah, I think there's something to seeing paintings, which we are just so accustomed.
The presence of the object that could be destroyed. There's only one.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
you can't destroy Kubrick. His whole movie is hyperspatial, so it's not Kubrick.
Actually, you could.
If you were in the presence of actual Kubrick,
actually,
be in the presence of Pollock.
Actually, they could all be destroyed, and that's the fucked up thing about it.
Not as easily.
No, pretty, like, ultimately, in the grand scheme.
You could destroy all of Pollock in one afternoon.
No, I don't. This is what I mean is that when you're looking at electronics in general, things could stop at a certain point and just be gone. We're literally building upon something that doesn't have a true foundation. It's etheric.
It's already there.
I'm just saying, like, we do know that, right? That when we're dealing, and like, you know, electricity is something that takes a lot of people to keep going.
The apocalypse happened. How much of this could we rebuild?
Right. Like, the only things.
That's what we have.
Right. But the internet is not. It doesn't have a real foundation, ultimately. I mean, it kind of does in a way, but in the grand scheme of things, this could all be gone.
Like 10,000 years of human history swimming through it.
Right. Well. Yeah.
And like a billion years of imagination. I mean, the internet is, it's like a fucking comet. There's like the rock hard ice of history, and then the fucking 13 million mile light year tail of imagination.
Right.
The internet is like this double wide thing, and you can. The rabbit holes are when you think you're into the fucking ice, but you're really just spiraling out, you know what I mean?
Right.
But the meat, like, there's nothing new with the internet. It's just a fucking comet, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's Cosmic Charlie, you know what I mean? It's not part of any ecosystem.
Cosmic Charlie don't surf.
Don't surf, no internet.
No, well, that was... So we just had the... episode of Synchronize go up with
Synchronize is just an infomercial for Radio 8 Ball, right?
An infomercial for it's an episode of Radio 8 Ball done in Olympia.
And I can't sleep, and like Benny Hill is over, and then it's Synchronize, and then it's an infomercial for Radio 8 Ball.
Well, it is a Radio 8 Ball episode.
So you don't have to explain to him, David. He's just being a dick. He's not being serious.
Sorry, I didn't realize, sir. It's like when you get pulled over, and you're like,
"Do you know how fast you were going?"
Yeah, you know how fast you're going, and then he's like, and then you're like, "Yeah, I think I was going like, you know,
I thought we were at the next club.
I think I was going like, you know, 69 miles an hour." And he's like, "Yeah, well, the speed limit was 65," and you're like, "Yeah, but isn't there like a 5 mile range?" And he's like, "No, but you know, you see, the thing is that I'm an asshole." And you're like, "Oh, wait, what?" He's like, "Oh, well, I'm an asshole, so I have to write you this ticket." And you're like, "Oh, I didn't realize you're an asshole, so you have to write." Yeah. "Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. No, I don't like it either. It's just the way I am. I'm just an asshole." And you're like, "Okay." I had this realization at a certain point, and it's true. It really is like that. I'm not to say that that's what you are or whatever, but there's a phenomenon. You're like, "Oh no, you're being a dick." "Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, you're a dick." Yeah, okay, I got it.
You know, can we go here? I want to go here a second, because this is actually what I was trying to say before about this to me is the heart of the matter in a lot of ways. I had a pretty, I sussed pretty strongly that, Bill, that would be your feeling about it. I don't know why, but I guess I just know you well enough. But you know, here's the thing. Sync quick news. I wanna just give me a minute here. Sync quick news, right? Everybody loved that shit. Everybody fucking loved that shit.
Yeah, it's best.
But I kind of fucking hated it after a while, in the sense that I felt completely tied to the news cycle, which to me is an artificially controlled thing in and of itself, it's almost like I become a news aggregator, right? Here's the five stories that everyone's talking about, and I get to make some sort of comment about it or can show you the connections between these five stories. But ultimately, it's like those five stories were handed to me, not by the CIA, not because I work for somebody, not because someone's paying my bills, but because someone, we talk about like media control and consolidation, even though I don't work for them, ultimately, the reason people loved it is because it was relevant. It was everything people that they were talking about. Oh, yeah, I'm totally talking about this thing happening right now. Why are you talking about it? Because it's blasted over your Facebook. Who's decided to blast it over your fucking Facebook? Why did that become a story?
Blast it all over your face.
Right, exactly. So I almost felt like, in one respect, like a pawn or an accomplice in this thing, but also very artistically limited, is I have to work with the stories that are happening. But again, what people decide are the relevant stories or not, or I can, you know, I can try and suss out, I can try and seek out smaller stories that people aren't focusing on and say, hey, this is what you should really be talking about or whatever. But you get what I mean, though? It's like, yeah. It was a frustrating experience for me in that, like, I couldn't tell if I was doing harm or good. I also felt like I was fighting with people's, like, giving into the short attention span.
When Jon Stewart left The Daily Show, he said watching all these channels all day is incredibly depressing.
Yeah.
Because he had to do the same thing.
And, I mean, that's just, I mean, it's so funny. I wasn't really a big Daily Show fan, but I saw a bunch of stuff with him and Stephen Colbert when they were quitting and reading what they were saying. And I was like, wow, I felt like that after like 20 weeks. I couldn't imagine doing that for like 10 years. Because like to see a bunch of depressing news, and then at some point, like the show became kind of like a comedy, I guess. And then people, yeah. You know, it's like are expecting me to be funny. And it's like, oh, here's like people killing children and institutionalized racism, and let's make a joke about it. It's like, I can't do that. I don't know. I found the whole thing very hard and I wrestle with it and I just sort of had to step away. But I thought the utilizing the Radio 8 Ball footage in such a way was a way to kind of show the connections, but without, it's like, instead of using somebody else's media stream, using our own media stream. Does that make sense? I don't have to just go with the stories that Fox News and NBC and GE decided everyone should care about.
No, you can go in any direction you want to, really. Right. I mean, it's all you, Alan. You're the one making the fucking show. And, like, come on, man. Like, really, like, you'd say for the short attention span, but do you really want to make something that's an hour long each week or something? I mean, what do you want to do? I mean, okay. You did. There's like the fucking magic happened there, man. Like
I know
the fucking Watchmen one. Jesus, shit on the carpet, dude. That shit was nuts, dude. And like that was like you set up a context for it. And I know that you're probably gonna go back to it, and I hope you do. You know, it's just.
Well, that's here's the funny thing, right? So that's when I started to say this before about the whole lightning strike in Mecca. It was right. The first time in months that I really wanted to do a St. Quick News.
Right.
I was like, holy shit. Because even what you guys are saying, like, I got this like blue balls of like, oh my God, I see what's happening here, right? And you mentioned Jason Barrera, but this ties into Joe Alexander's work. It ties into Jake Kotz's work.
Everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything.
Right, everybody and everything. Anyway, I was just like, holy shit. And it's like, that happened the same week that I clocked in 103 hours at my job.
Right.
To not make a lot of money. And I'm like, this became an entire existential crisis of like, I have this thing that I could make, that I want to make, that people really want me to make,
that I can't afford
to make.
Totally.
And it's like all this sort of everything sort of hit ahead for me. I don't know.
Sure.
But I guess what I'm saying, so that's a whole other sort of more personal thing I'm still trying to struggle with. But as far as, Bill, your point about, yeah, just the new thing about Radio 8 Ball, I mean, first of all, like I said, for me, it's nice to show that this, because for all, sorry, there's one more aspect here. Probably the most popular video that I did, as far as view count, is the 9/11 lightning struck tower, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
which is OTO all over it.
Yeah.
Which you got to do something on fucking we got to put something together, and if it's not a video, it's something, because between Oculus and that, you know about Oculus?
What's Oculus?
Oculus, the giant.
Oh, total Illuminati.
Well, no, it's not just Illuminati. It's because people are saying it's the eye. But it's this thing they put at Ground Zero that's like a giant.
Oh.
It's supposed to be a dove.
It looks like a Venus flytrap.
Well, it looks like a Venus flytrap.
Venus in fur, dude.
Totally. Right.
But I'll tell you immediately for me when I look at that, which was immediately made me think of the lightning flash video, is that we have this. It's not just Kabbalah, okay, that we're talking about. This isn't regular Kabbalah. This is like Crowleyan OTO Golden Dawn.
Straight up
Kabbalah.
Your ass, Golden Dawn.
Golden Dawn to the max. And you know what? That fucking Oculus thing, as far as I can tell, the joke of them saying it's a dove and then it's obviously an eye, is the fucking OTO emblem of the Vesica Pisces with the dove aimed downward, mind you. This is a dove aimed into Ground Zero. And then what do you have but the chalice below? And the chalice has the blood of the saints. It's the sacrifice. It is a dove aimed at sacrifice in the OTO emblem with the eye above it, of the eye of Ra in the triangle with the rays.
Right, you know, and I guess you're considering the chalice being that underground sort of museum cavity.
Sure.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, as soon as I saw that thing, I was like, OTO.
The tower card in the Thoth Tarot has the eye and the dove.
Right, because the eye above, along with the rays, and then it's got the mouth for pay, and then the mouth has the fire that's incinerating the thing.
The helmet, because some tower cards were the gate to hell. Others were Adam and Eve being expelled by the garden. And other versions of the tower card was a tree being struck.
No, but not with the tower, with the lovers, it was Adam and Eve in the garden. Have you seen versions?
No, there are some old tower cards. It is Adam and Eve being expelled.
Really?
Yep.
Interesting. But it's not Marseille, and it's not.
Oh,
Ryder.
I think I've actually seen that. Right, because even like in your the more common imagery of the two people sort of falling out of the tower, it was this
right.
same sort of two figures.
I see what you're saying. Well, the thing with that is that originally
and
it was
because the tower is the fucking tree, right?
Well, the only reason why the tower is the tree is because the tower wasn't called the tower; it was called the House of God, and it's a specific reference to Solomon's temple. And so the destruction of the temple, which is Tisha B'Av, which is, you know, 9/11, it's that symbolism. You couldn't get more pronounced. What do we got popping here, Bill? What is this? Jackson Pollock. You want me to look at this Jackson? You want us to look at this Jackson Pollock?
Should I hit a bowl first?
Maybe. Oh, this is the one you saw. You're not going to tell us. You're just going to type it to us. I can't look at these things and not talk about them.
And it's super pixelated.
Is it bad?
Well, it's good. It's good. I get the idea.
Here's a quick story.
Bad in the sense that I could do it.
I went to the artist. This is the greatest story. All right. It's the greatest story of all time. It's pretty good. So a girl that I used to bartend with, she just got divorced. And I thought I had some slight possible influence in their divorce. Just as like, you know, what am I doing?
You had sex 20... with her?
No, I was like, I was 20. She was like 23 and she was divorced. And the guy was like a Christian. She's like, this is fucked up, you know. She worked at this Irish bar, a bunch of drunks. And, you know, I was a drunk, and I worked with her, and I think it was like, yeah, fuck it. If this guy can survive, I can survive. And he's, like, 10 years older, right? So, anyways, an Irish girl, she invites me to the Art Institute because she goes, what's that movie, Bullet? Who's the star?
Steve McQueen.
She goes, Steve McQueen is doing a retrospective there. And I go, Steve McQueen? She goes, oh, not the guy from Bullet, but the guy who did the movie about the IRA. You know, the black director. What's it, what did he do? He did...
IRA.
Do you know the one I'm talking about?
I don't know.
No? Anyone? He did 12 Years a Slave. He won the fucking Oscar.
Oh, which admittedly, the majority of people that voted for that movie to get an Oscar had never seen it. Which right. I thought was interesting.
she goes, let's go to the Art Institute because Steve McQueen is doing a presentation there. I go, oh my God. Okay, so yeah, that I'll fucking totally go see that guy talk about film. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
I'd seen the IRA one, the one with Fassbinder, and then he did the other thing, you know, so he's whatever. So we go to the Art Institute, and it's like someone's given her dissertation on Steve McQueen, and then Steve McQueen's got like, you know, like 14 rooms of like paintings and, well, not paintings, but like pictures and videos and text messages or something like that. Anyways, it was a complete miss, Steve McQueen. There was nothing. Like, I didn't get what I was looking for with Steve McQueen. Right? I thought the guy was going to be there. When I saw the Pollock, like, the guy, Robert, like, that guy was there with me. You know what I mean? Like, that dude was... I know the dude who made that thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't get any sense of the dude, Steve McQueen, from a lecture hall and 14 rooms of little videos and photographs. So I'm just saying, when you really meet an artist, and David, I put your artwork on the fish boards, you know what I mean? Got a few responses, you know what I mean? A few people looked at it. Got a few positive responses about it.
You know what?
Your best work.
It sucks. It shouldn't be on the internet.
A Pollock thing.
My work should not be on the internet. I mean, it looks okay on the internet, but you don't.
No, and that's what I tell people.
You don't get the idea. And like people, I've had people over and over again. Like Doug asked, he was like, "Oh, you think they look good in person too?" It's like, no, the only way to really see them is in person. I mean, that's the thing. Okay. I want to do gallery shows. So
that's what I said on them fish boards. And they're like, well, it's expensive. But I'm like, I know that if I saw your shit in person in scale, it would just, I wouldn't recover. And that's what I get from a Pollock, man. And
my stuff is extremely inexpensive for what it is. Even for people who are selling G. Clay prints in the first place are selling their things for at least three times the price. For what the size of the prints that I'm giving, at least three times the price.
Well, David, here's the fucking the acid test of your artwork is that there's not a single person alive who can make a David Plate except for David Plate.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
That was like a queef of humility. There's not a single person who can put together that shit but you right now. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Because of the interconnections of the things that you're putting. This is not random shit. This is like a focused thing. And when you see a Pollock, you have to realize, Plate, that's like, you got to see that in Pollock, man. That motherfucker is a badass. There's no way the CIA had any part in fucking Pollock.
No, what you need to realize.
They didn't paint his paintings for him.
Right. They didn't paint his paintings for him. And he was already an artist. It's not like they were like, hey, like, it's not like he's a CIA operative himself. He's an artist who's just trying to get
noticed.
It was
like they were fighting communism with LSD. They were like, here, take some LSD. He'd be like, the American government is so cool.
No, it was, I can see that there's so many things happening at once that it's really difficult to truly, you know, quantify and qualify what it all means. Because it's not that he's a bad artist. I'm not putting down Jackson Pollock in any way. I'm just saying is like these. No, I'm not.
You're letting an octopus beast eat him alive.
No, I'm pointing out what has been communicated by the people themselves.
Well, you're giving life to the octopus.
No, I'm just fucking doing what I always do, which is saying my understanding if something's true. I point it out. Like, there's all kinds of shit that people will tell me that I don't want to hear, that I wish I hadn't heard, but once it's introduced, I have to acknowledge it. And so this is an example of something like that. I think that that's totally different.
I think that Pollock is an example of watermelon water, you know? Watermelon water is like, you know, this rich dude's got a company. And he's got, like, this Indian secretary who's got this idea. And she's like, hey, you could sell watermelon water and people would buy it because of all the festivals. If you just give me, like, $30 million, we can manufacture it, bottle it, advertise it, start making money.
It's genius. Yeah, great idea.
And he's like, okay, I got $30 million to blow and just do it. It's a good idea. It only cost probably like $250,000 to get it up and running, but she conned him and got all that extra millions. So it doesn't matter if the business succeeds. She's got money for all these other ideas. That's what we're talking about.
Right. I believe Kubrick and Polanski were incredible filmmakers, but I'm still speculating that they got funding from, some shady facets or something.
What do you think about the chess thread in all this, Bobby Fischer? And do you think that Stanley Kubrick ever talked to Bobby Fischer?
All I know and what I've been talking about on this show that completely blows my fucking world apart is that 666 days after Stanley Kubrick died, it was January 1st, 2001. That's 1-1-1. And then 666 days before he died was the day that the first machine beat a person at chess, which happened to be admittedly modeled after the monolith itself by IBM. And so I don't know what to make of that. That's insane.
What do you think about the Bobby Fischer story?
I don't know. My mom met him at one point. My mom was a chess player who used to play in competitions, and her father was a chess player, and so but she never played him, but she was actually at a tournament that he was also at.
I'll say this. Yeah. The only person below Bobby Fischer is Bruce Lee. Bobby Fischer is above him. And this is the reason why. Bruce Lee practiced an art that nobody could compete in.
Right.
And Bobby Fischer practiced an art that a lot of people competed in, but nobody could compete with him in. And he vanquished all competitors. And I think when he went to that farce in Russia, whatever it was, I think the thing that confused him was that he met his opponent. And in the first 2 minutes of meeting him, Bobby Fischer knew I could beat him any way I wanted to beat him. Mm-hmm. And then the whole question became, how much money can we make off of how you beat him?
Right.
Because they knew that they were stepping into a understood reality. No one knew the programs better than Steve Jobs. His next product will defeat the next competitor. Mm-hmm. That's what they were dealing with in Bobby Fischer. And so they said, how can we get to Bobby Fischer to get him to make money on this? And if you look at the match with him showing up late and the confusion and the madness, it's actually very butchered, I think, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that's how he lost his mind, is because he wanted to find that opponent who made him doubt his abilities, but he realized when he got to the highest peak that there was no doubt. It was just, how can we exploit your abilities? It didn't have the same golden touch, you know?
Sure, it was all about exploitation.
It was an equal opportunity exploitation, which is what Zen is. That's the perversity of Zen, right?
What do you mean that's what Zen is? What are you talking about?
Zen is perverse.
What do you, the art of Zen?
That's the tantric shadow, you know? It's what? The white whisper.
I'm sorry, I don't completely follow.
It's the fat Buddha. It's the Jan Ervin in your soul. I know you got it.
No, I don't know. I spent a lot of time at Zen Abbeys. I'm looking for...
Do you have any Jan in you? You want to?
Oh boy, I'm not that tired yet, but I'm earlier than you guys, I think. So I'm not yawning yet.
New Irvin, that's so good. Orange is the new blackhead.
Orange is the new Black Mirror. I watch him at the same time. Don't do that. Don't do that. Just don't.
So Orange is DMT, and Black Mirror is the scrying stone of John Dee. away from drugs and we're going straight into reflection.
Love sees love's happiness, but happiness can't see the love is sad, the love is sad. Sadness is hanging there to show love somewhere something needs a change. They need a change. They'll need a grain. They'll need a grain to take the house he built for her apart to make it break. It's gonna take a metal ball hung from a chain. They'll need a grain. They'll need a grain to pick the broken ruins up again, to mend her heart, to help him start to see a world apart from pain. Lad's gal is all he has. Gal's gladness hangs upon the love of lad, the love of lad. Some things gal says to lad aren't meant as bad, but cause a little pain. They cause him pain. They'll need a crane. They'll need a crane to take the house he built for her apart to make it break. It's gonna take a metal ball hung from a chain. They'll need a crane. They'll need a crane to pick the broken ruins up again, to mend her heart, to help him start to see a world apart from pain. Don't call me at work again, oh no, the boss still hates me, I'm just tired, and I don't love you anymore. And there's a restaurant we should check out where the other nightmare people like to go. I mean nice people, baby, wait, I didn't mean to say nightmare. Lad looks at other gals, gal thinks Jim Beam is handsomer than lad, he isn't bad. Call off the wedding band. Nobody wants to hear that one again. Play that again. They'll need a crane. They'll need a crane to take the house he built for her apart to make it break. It's gonna take a metal ball hung from a chain. They'll need a crane. They'll need a crane to pick the broken ruins up again, to mend her heart, to help her start to see a world apart from pain. They'll need a crane. 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 They'll need a crane.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune into our other SyncBook Radio programs, including 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathemagical Radio Hour, Pentimental, Synchronize, Sync Quick News, as well as our most recent editions, Fine Just Fine and Hypnosis. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.